Next on BYUSN, big weekend for BYU basketball as the Cougars take on number 19 Arizona. What do we expect will be different in the second matchup between their game against Arizona? And what do we feel is sustainable from the Kansas unbelievable performance that will carry over into tomorrow's game against the Wildcats?
Former women's basketball star Teresa Spalding Hampson joins us ahead of her jersey retirement ceremony, what it means to her and how the game has evolved over the years. And track and field sprinter Sammy Oblad in the house talking about a recent record-breaking performance and the upcoming Big 12 Indoor Championships.
Just your average day on BYU Sports Nation. More records broken by BYU track and field.
We'll talk about baseball in a minute, too.
Holy cow. Welcome to the show, presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere. Happy Friday. This is how we do it. It is February 21st. I am Spencer Linton, alongside a man who's working on his grip strength, Jerem Jordan.
It's never mattered to me that much, although they're like, think, you know, you can practice and, you know, there's stuff for your jaw, apparently, you know, if you want to be a Hollywood star. But apparently at Big 12 Basketball Media Days, the men and women's teams were given this grip strength test, and I was impressed by what most of them did. I'm not going to name names, but Trevin Nell. He's probably stronger than I am, though, so I can't make fun too much.
So he's just taking it easy.
Amari Whiting, she's got the strength. She works out. Okay, 82.2. Yeah, Trevin Nell. He's our boy. 1,000 point score. 92.5 is pretty good. Who was it? I think Kimmery Congdon.
Yeah.
Beat him. Coach Kevin Young, 123.6.
He's got that old man dad strength.
Crushed it, man, right?
Let's go. Yeah.
We can't call him old man when we're a similar age.
I'm only saying that because that's what was said on the video.
Oh, gotcha. I was like, bro, we're the same age as Kevin.
That was what was said on the video. Foose had 150 pounds.
Foose
of grip
is strong as an ox,
he
dude.
He has huge hands.
Oh.
Like whenever he shakes my hand, I'm
Jeff
like.
Jeff Chapman thinks that Foose has big hands. Right? You can go to the student athlete building, and is it still there? There's like this ball or whatever. You can see like how big some people's hands were. Like, oh my gosh, Jeff Chapman, like first team.
Incredible.
All, first team all big hands.
Incredible. Hey, hold on tight because it's time for what's trending.
Arizona's really good, man. They're super impressive. I think we're a more physical team now than we were the first time we played them.
I think we're learning a lot about our teams. And honestly, man, just the belief in ourselves.
Let's just keep stacking days, fellas.
And the next day, BYU and Arizona face off in Tucson. So, the 19th-ranked Wildcats preparing
Tucson?
To host the Cougars of BYU in Tucson. And BYU only has a 26% chance to win the game, according to our good friend Ken Pomeroy, college basketball stats guru. Arizona, if you remember, and I know most of you do, won the last matchup in Provo. One of two teams to win in Provo this year, joining Texas Tech, the final 85-74.
Just good teams.
So, why should BYU fans maybe feel that this game's going to be different? What do you think will be different this go-around in Tucson? Compared to what happened in Provo.
I think three things will be different for the French Cougs.
Okay.
One, BYU won't go 0-for for a six-minute stretch. They struggled at the end of the game against Arizona. They couldn't buy a bucket. It was bad.
Six-minute stretch.
Right? BYU ends up shooting, you know, 1.04 points per possession. Close to that magic number I've talked about of 1.1. BYU undefeated when they get to that number. They're 1-8 when they score fewer. 2-6 when they allow 1.1 or more, they allowed 1.232. So a little more efficiency offensively, defensively. Number two, BYU won't be beaten by 15 on the boards. BYU is 17-2 when out-rebounding its opponents, 0-6 when not. That's a big thing for this team. We heard it in The Cut, if you watched it last night. Kevin Young said against Kansas, everybody's got to crash the boards. If you crash the boards and you play well there, you got a chance. Don't forget that it was tough to rebound against Tobe Awake and the boys, okay? That's number two. Number three, three-point shooting. At home, in the second half, for some reason, BYU went 3-for-16 from distance. I don't think BYU is going to go 3-for-16
they
in the second half
that.
Again. So those three things I don't think are going to happen again. And that was a perfect storm where it's a close game with about 6 minutes to go, and then you can't score, you lose.
Let's start with, yeah, the three-point shooting on both sides, though, Jerem, because Arizona against BYU was pretty good, unexpectedly, from the three-point line. Caleb Love and their guard play in general was just really, really good.
Yeah.
Overall.
More on that in a moment.
Since then, Arizona has been awful from the three-point line. So I don't expect the Wildcats to emulate what they did in Provo, even on their home floor, okay, because of the trend that they are currently on right now, which is 21%, 15 of 76 over a four-game stretch. So why would I believe that all of a sudden, and maybe I'm speaking it into existence, sorry if I am, that they're going to turn the corner and just shoot lights out? They just aren't a good three-point shooting team. They get after it on the glass. They get after it in the paint. They're really, really good in the paint and scoring and getting to the rim. But I do not expect Arizona to be as good as they were shooting from outside and as efficient as they were in Provo. I think BYU's defense will be ramped up. They'll be more physical. There will be a more significant challenge in the paint there from BYU, I think. I do not expect BYU to be out-rebounded as significantly as they were in the first matchup.
No. Minus 15?
That was crazy.
45 to 30?
Yeah.
No, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, so I kind of start there. And I feel like if BYU is going to win this game, it has to be that way.
Yeah. BYU's got to play really well to win at Arizona. This would be, again, the next best win of the season. Kansas was awesome, don't get me wrong. You win at Arizona, that's better than beating Kansas by 34 at home.
Yes.
Like, you'll remember Kansas more than you would winning at Arizona,
yeah.
But the best win would be Arizona because they're a top 10 net team. And this would be, again, you're beating one of the top four teams in the league. Like, that would be amazing.
As good as the Kansas win was.
BYU needs a win against one of those teams to sort of take a jump up in seeding in the NCAA tournament, perhaps even in the Big 12 tournament.
Okay, so correct me if I'm wrong. As good as the win against Kansas was in Provo, if BYU wins in Tucson, that all of a sudden, overnight, becomes BYU's best win on their resume.
Yes, and again, we will remember the Kansas game more than almost anything this year, unless BYU goes to the Sweet 16 or something, right? That was an all-time win. But as we look at BYU's resume, which, by the way, BYU's off the bubble in Lenardi's brackets as of a moment ago, meaning they're not in the last four or the last four byes.
Interesting.
So BYU is, you know, in a comfortable spot. BYU didn't have to win per se, Spence, but, like, it would be nice. We'll talk about that in a moment. On to topic two. What is sustainable going into the Arizona game from BYU's dominant win against Kansas?
I feel like asking BYU to make 10 first-half three-pointers is probably too much on the road.
If you can go 15 assists on 15-minute field goals again, that'd be
they
great.
They didn't shoot it particularly well in the second half. They only made four threes in the second half, which isn't a bad number. But compared to what they did in the first half, I feel like that BYU, they can sustain the overall percentage of what they did from the three-point line as they cooled off in the second half. I feel like that can travel. This is a good enough shooting team that they can go and shoot better than 29% from the three-point line that they did against Arizona on their home floor. BYU can shoot 35% or better. Like that. So in a way, I'm not asking BYU to be as unbelievable as they were against Kansas, but I do believe that better three-point shooting is sustained, and they can do that even on the road. Once again, I feel like it's just there. It's the great equalizer for this team against a physical bunch like Arizona. If you get pushed around a little bit and if the rebounding margin is going in Arizona's favor, you can make up for some of that by shooting the ball well from three.
What's the point of the gyms and the churches if BYU doesn't shoot well? Is it for the Christmas dinner? Which you need to go two sides, by the way, on that. If you're ever at a one-sided dinner, just leave.
Too slow.
Oh, efficiency. We need multiple tables, both sides, two sides running. Come on!
Okay.
And that's an American church for us. That's not outside the church. They have soccer, you know, outside.
Yes.
So this is America.
Yeah. So BYU's not going to shoot. They're not going to shoot 10 for 34 from the three-point line like they did against Arizona. 29%. Like, that's not good. This is a much better shooting team than that.
Yep.
BYU was 14 of 36 from the three-point line against Kansas, which was good for 39%. I'm asking for 35 or better percent. I think that team can do that. So if you want to call that being sustainable in a way, yeah, I start there. And I feel like effort and defense, that travels Like, that is sustainable.
You to Tucson.
You can give that effort.
Yeah.
Can you not? You control the effort.
Yes.
And the defensive game plan and execution.
In the All-Star game, we saw that they don't care.
Yeah, exactly right.
BYU cares, though.
That's sustainable. Like, the effort and the defensive game plan.
Please make it manifest.
Okay, what would you add to that list?
I would add that you can sustain the buy-in, the detailed execution and preparation that Kevin Young talked about. The team basketball that BYU's playing with, how they share the ball and how they're playing for each other. Those are winning principles. Then I would, of the numerical stuff, the 1.1 points per possession thing is sustainable. I think BYU is sharing the ball. They're pushing it more. That is sustainable. Defensively, they've got to be better than that first matchup. They couldn't stay in front of Caleb Love and Jaden Bradley. They could not. Tobe Awake dominated the glass. Henry Vassar was a surprise off the bench as a big man who scored a bunch. Those two combined for 31 points, 15 rebounds. Foose and Kebakeda need to bring it. We're seeing another level of Kebakeda, like the guy that we expected from Utah that came that was
He's
a force.
Playing with much more force.
He's up a notch or two, like that spike near the end of the game.
His impact, rim protecting, rebounding the basketball, going after loose balls, like
green
all
arrow
of that
up.
Stuff.
Green arrow up. Yep. Yes. I think that's sustainable.
Okay.
Does it mean they're going to win? I don't know.
Not necessarily.
But I think they're going to be in it at the end, unlike they were going cold for 6 minutes.
I believe BYU will dare, in some capacity, Arizona to beat them from the perimeter. That there will be opportunities for Arizona to
shoot. They did with Kansas, but Kansas doesn't have a lot of shooters. Arizona has more shooters, granted, more volume shooters.
Yes.
But if Caleb Love's hot, like, he's one of the best players in the conference, in the country.
And he got going against BYU.
He got going a little bit. And they got to the free throw line a little bit.
They do that.
Jaden Bradley got to the free throw line, I think, 8 times.
Make a lot of free throws. Yeah. Like, they are really efficient. And so
can you guard without fouling? That's another question I have.
Against a physical team, because Arizona brings it to you. They thrive on creating contact and drawing fouls, getting to the free throw line, getting to the rim, getting rebounds.
Really fun to watch.
It's frustrating, but it is a very, very tried and true formula to win a lot of games in this conference.
You have to be skilled offensively to get those calls, right? Otherwise, everyone would do it.
So I think BYU may early on try and test Arizona and say, okay.
Go ahead.
See what you can do from the outside, because you have shot the ball so poorly in the last 4 games. We'll give you maybe a few of those looks from the outside, and BYU work on their shell philosophy, really, really packing it in defensively in the key.
Watch the contest, like how close it is. Like, oh, yeah, I'm really coming out. Oh, shoot it. Don't shoot it.
I think BYU will contest against Caleb Love regardless. But some of the other guys that have not been as great, they may give them opportunities, and we see what happens. It kind of backfired against BYU at Cincinnati.
Yeah, Jizzle James couldn't miss.
Cincinnati was the worst three-point shooting team in the conference going into that game, and then they had their best shooting performance.
Sometimes, you know, shots go down. It's, are we contesting? Are we getting a rebound? If you don't want second chance, that O-board kick out for an open three is a killer.
Minus 15 in rebounding margin.
No, that one really sticks out. Yeah, 17-2 when you out-rebound the opponent. Like, it's not just about rebounding. It's about what rebounding means to your whole team. And rebounding is a big deal for this BYU team.
I don't think that we are asking for anything ultra extraordinary here like BYU had in the Kansas game.
Do what you do well.
But BYU, I think that it is fair to ask this team to show up with confidence and swagger on defense.
They have it.
And that they will shoot the three better than they did the first game against Arizona and won't be out-rebounded by 15.
If I'm Arizona, I'm nervous. Because you watch that Kansas game, you go, oh, my gosh, that's as good as BYU can be. As Bill Self said, BYU could have beat anybody tonight.
Mm. Well, let's say small blue goggles on, because I don't think it requires extra large blue goggles to ask
a
question.
I saw yesterday what you did that. Yeah.
What would a win against 19th-ranked Arizona mean for BYU's resume? Because, as you pointed out, they're already off the bubble. They're not even one of the last 4 byes.
Yeah.
They're in by at least 8 teams.
Let's go. It'd be the 2 best wins of the season. In
back
the same
to back.
Week.
Back to back in BYU's toughest week.
Exactly. You continue to just push away from the bubble. You're not going to be like a first four team. You'd be aiming for a 7, 8, or 9 seed as opposed to a 10 or 11. Right now, Lenardi has BYU as a 10. And then Bracket Matrix, by the way, 10 seed. And they're in every single bracket on Bracket Matrix.
It was 102 out of 103 yesterday. It's bumped up.
Today it's 108 out of 108.
Hey, The other six got the message.
Right? Suddenly, if you beat Arizona, you've got an outside shot still with four games left after this, five with Arizona, to be a top four seed in the Big 12 tournament. Top four seed means you're straight into the quarters on Thursday. That'd be amazing. I'm expecting 5-8.
Yeah, it would require something unexpected from Iowa State or Texas Tech.
Yeah, and which happened on Tuesday. They unexpectedly lost to TCU.
Yes.
Would you have a couple others?
BYU would have to go 4-1, and those teams would have to go 2-3.
I don't expect BYU to be a top four seed, but if you beat Arizona, you're thinking there's a chance that happens. I'm expecting a 5 or 6 seed and for BYU to start on Wednesday. My goal for BYU is to get to Thursday, and if you get beyond that, that's great. If you go Friday, come on. That's another quad one win probably, right? So minimal goal would be that. But, yeah, if you beat Arizona, all of a sudden you are the hottest team in the Big 12 with the win streak and who you've beaten.
Yeah, think about that. If it's a four-game win streak with a win at West Virginia.
Yes.
You took down the heater in Kansas State, you destroyed Kansas, and you just won at Arizona.
You become what Kansas State was a week ago.
Yes.
So I like where BYU's at. To me, a loss doesn't hurt you that much either, Spence. You're not supposed to win this game anyway. Just compete well. Play well. If you lose close, not a big deal. Move on. You got big games in the Final Four. At Arizona State on Wednesday, not Tuesday, is a game that BYU has to win.
You have adequately answered the question. I mean, there is nothing like unbelievable that this win would do for BYU that you haven't mentioned. It would jump the Cougars up a seed line or two, as you mentioned.
Maybe they're a 9 seed.
It just gives belief to BYU and puts a little bit of an interesting wrench into the Big 12 standings. Like, maybe. What if BYU does finish in the top four? It gives them belief they could finish in the top four.
I'll tell you what we'll do if BYU beats Arizona. We will go. How'd they lose to TCU in Utah?
Growing pains.
Right? Was it necessary for them to lose those
early
games to get to this point? Because if they don't lose those two, they're in the mix for top four.
Yeah.
But let's be honest. With freshmen, with new coaching staff, they needed to figure some things out. It's unrealistic to think that they would just jump in and dominate.
The only real head-scratcher in the last 9 games for BYU was what happened at Cincinnati.
Yeah. Before that, TCU
in the last 9 games, right?
But the Mewitt Mag starting lineup situation, they're 8-3 with those 11. Like, since that switch, they've been pretty stinking good.
It just gives the nation and all of the national college basketball pundits a little bit more to discuss when it comes to BYU. If you beat Arizona, then they're taken more seriously. They are viewed differently now in has BYU legitimately solidified themselves as, like, they're going to be a top 5 team in the Big 12? Like, this is just
fun. I think if BYU wins Saturday, they're in the NCAA tournament. Like,
it would clinch it.
Like, a week ago, we were like, okay, they're in the last four in.
There are categories.
Yeah, they would. It's like, oh, they're going to make it.
There are categories that are put out by the bracketologists, including Lunardi and others. It's like, still work to do and should be in.
Not that the work is done. They're just going to keep that going and get in.
BYU is in a should be in scenario right now.
Yeah.
If you beat Arizona, then they join the lock party. Like, they're a lock for the NCAA tournament. Lunardi has a green highlighter that says, like, they're in. It's over.
Yes.
You would see BYU's name with a green highlighter over it on Monday if they win at Arizona.
Yeah.
Lock status.
Yep.
So maybe that is significant to some degree.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
We've settled on that. I think that's totally fair. Our question of the day: what do you feel like BYU basketball can carry over into the Arizona game from their win against Kansas? I'm hoping somebody says a 34-point victory.
What?
Jimmer Fredette, where are you?
Hey, last time.
Go back to McHale.
Last time BYU played in Tucson, it went really well.
Yes, it did.
He was really well.
Très bien. Andrew G. Garrett on X says, defense travels. We discussed it.
Okay.
Cougs have been rolling ever since Mewitt Mag was inserted into the starting lineup. Plus, add Kaba's volleyball spikes and Trey Stewart's defensive quickness, and that's a recipe for lockdown defense.
Yeah, the perimeter defense, the interior, all of it matters. Like, Arizona, pretty well rounded there. It's going to be a big challenge.
Trey Stewart is an interesting reference there because he has played, like, limited minutes, but in those limited minutes, he has been outstanding.
Very effective. Yep.
Very efficient.
Love it.
Weigh in on X, Facebook, and Instagram to join the conversation.
Baseball has won 3 of its last 4, 2 against Mountain West preseason pick Fresno State, and then last night against CSUN, won 19-3, including 10 homers. Most since 1998 for the Cougs. Have the last three games changed your expectations for the season?
I want to say yes so badly. I really do. I want to say yes, but it's so early. And Northridge isn't what they used to be. They're not a baseball powerhouse. Like, they have been at points in Southern California. But still, a five-inning home run. Five home runs in one inning.
Yes.
Five home run inning.
I feel you.
Okay? 10 overall. That is incredible. If anything, it should give BYU supreme confidence that their bats are very, very alive and well. But it's too early. Like, if they win this series, okay, then that gains some momentum. I'll tell you this. I don't think they're going to finish last in the Big 12. I do not expect BYU to finish last in the Big 12.
They cannot.
So in that case, but my expectations were that they wouldn't do that anyway. They were picked to finish last. I do not believe BYU will finish last in the Big 12 conference, which is loaded. They have a lot of good baseball, teams in that
tough
conference.
League.
But it's too early. We're six games in. Now, if BYU is, let's say, four games over 500, 15 games into the season, now we're talking. Like, okay. Then maybe
that's a real turnaround.
My expectations shift. We can call that, a bounce back or a turnaround.
Yeah, too early to say. Awesome what they've done the last three games, especially last night. Can you sustain good pitching? Can you have timely hitting? Like, it's not just about 10 homers in this random game in February at CSUN, which is awesome. That's incredible. Don't want it to be the highlight of the year. Want it to be an upset win on the road like they did last year at Texas when they had a few timely home runs. Speaking
of, won that series.
Which was awesome. And Longhorn Network, they're just like, and another one. And it's gone. So haven't changed the expectations quite yet, a little early, but encouraged at what we're seeing the last couple games.
Mathematically speaking, I said four games over, 15 games, and you can't do that. You either would be 9-6 or 10-5. But you get what I'm saying. Like, if you are well above.
Don't let the details get in the way.
The 500 cut line, like, okay, now we can reassess.
No worries.
But I would love to see BYU get to be 9-6 through 15 games.
And what's the ultimate goal? It's make the Big 12 tournament, right?
Yes.
We're not saying this team needs to make an NCAA regional. We're saying get to the Big 12 tournament.
They didn't sniff it
last
year.
Is it still 10 teams like it was last year?
I believe so.
Okay,
Make
that tournament.
Did the expansion change that at all? We'll have to look into the rules.
I don't know. I'll have to look into that.
Okay. We'll ask our friend Dave McCann, who's been on a very long road trip with these guys, calling all the games on radio.
Hey, them Fairfield Inn points. Bonvoy just stacking up. Men's Hoops plays number 19 Arizona tomorrow night, as we mentioned. Pregame, 9 Eastern on BYU Radio. Game tips off at 10 Eastern on the Mothership, ESPN.
That's a huge day for BYU men's and women's basketball tomorrow. Speaking of, the greatest to ever play basketball for BYU on the women's side, Teresa Spalding Hampson joins us ahead of her jersey retirement ceremony. What does this honor mean to her? And what does she think of the growth in women's sports overall? This is BYU Sports Nation. We are live in Studio B. Happy Friday, everyone. Alongside Jerem Jordan, I'm Spencer Linton. It is our absolute pleasure to welcome in one of the most incredible women athletes to ever grace us at BYU. She is Teresa Spalding Hampson, and in Studio B. Teresa, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
On the eve of BYU retiring your jersey, what are your emotions like now that this is happening and that jersey's going up in the rafters?
Yeah, it's pretty much an incredible honor to see your number up in the rafters. I mean, I don't know. It's kind of great for my career and for my family, and I don't know, kind of a lot of emotions around that and a lot of memories to look back on, and just kind of to feel, I don't know, like, you know, I came to BYU. It was a big decision for me to come here. As far as basketball goes, it probably wasn't the best decision for a basketball career, but it was the best decision for me. Mm. You know, I was close to my family. I loved the atmosphere that was here at BYU, and I learned a lot while I was here. So it's been fun.
I don't know what took so long, but I'm glad it's happening.
Thanks.
What are some of those memories that you mentioned of not only playing here, but that decision to come here obviously has affected BYU basketball in that three of your daughters have played here, and your son was on the men's team this season, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, that is really interesting to me, too, because I chose this path, You know, this is something that I always wanted to do. I loved basketball. I loved playing the game. I actually didn't start until later in life. I was more of a swimmer. But I loved the game and being here. But what I probably got most out of it was the things that I learned. And here at BYU, you know, basketball has really changed over the years, and it's really kind of evolved. And when I was here, a lot of different things were happening. But one of the things that I really enjoyed about being on BYU's team is we would actually go and do firesides, you know. And at the time, I have to admit, I didn't really like speaking in front of people and things like that. But I did enjoy the people that we met and the atmosphere there and having the opportunity to bear testimonies. You know, that was really big. And I remember Coach Leishman always telling us, you're representing BYU. And when I played on the national team, it was also, that was important. You are representing the United States of America. You know, and that still brings chills to me, you know, those kinds of things. And my opportunities that I had, when I played, the national team was all amateurs. So now, you know, the Olympics, you have pro teams, mm-hmm. you have pro people going and playing and things like that. And so I remember when I was on the national team and we went to Canada, and so some of the guys on the men's team was Charles Barkley, Karl Malone, Devin Durant.
Not bad.
Danny Ainge. Or not Danny Ainge. I just left my mind on the guard for the Jazz, but he was also on.
John Stockton?
John Stockton.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so those kind of things. And I was only an alternate on the Olympic team, but when we went to the World Games, they still had the opening ceremonies. And I can't explain to you how it feels when you walk in representing the United States and the crowd goes wild. You know, it's just a wonderful feeling.
Yes.
That's awesome.
And to your point, representing BYU in that capacity.
Yeah.
Bigger than basketball.
And the church, yes. We would add, right? Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. And so I just learned a lot. And when I came in, I came into a pretty good team. They were pretty much established, and so I was just kind of an addition to the team my first 2 years. And I remember Val Cravens was my guard, and I was a little scared freshman and not knowing really what I was supposed to be doing and how to do it. And I remember her telling me, scaring me, whatever you want to call it, you know. It's just like, if I pass you the ball, you have to make it. And I'm just like, okay, I'll do that, you know, because I was just young and was a little nervous about this whole thing. And I just really tried hard when she passed me the ball to make it.
You took that advice to heart.
Oh, yes, very much so.
Because you finished, and it's still a record, 61% shooting from the field, number one all time at BYU. So that bit of advice really resonated
yes.
with you.
Yes, it did. Scared me probably a little too, but yeah.
Also number one in total career blocks, three-time All-American. She's having her jersey retired tomorrow. Teresa Spalding-Hampson is on BYU Sports Nation. Of all of the accolades and those statistics, which one do you enjoy the most? Which one are maybe you most proud of in the record books?
Blocks. That's what I did, and that's what I felt like I was good at. I mean, I did okay in reboundings and shooting as well, but that was probably one of the things that I felt like I was really good at.
You still have the upper hand on your daughters in that regard, too.
Yeah, that was kind of an interesting thing. Are they going to do it? Are
right?
they going to be
this? They were close. They were challenging that. Yeah. Heather and Sarah were so good, but they weren't just like blockers. They did so much. Which was amazing, and you had Heather, obviously, as an All-American in
Jen.
Volleyball.
Jen.
Sorry, Jen. My bad. Heather's on the team now.
Yes.
Jen, to me, is the greatest female athlete at BYU ever because All-American in two sports.
Yes.
Do you feel like she is? There have been some great athletes across the board, but to do it in two sports.
Two-sport All-American. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
She's just all around a great person, and she is – as a quiet competitor. You know, she's not really noisy or anything like that, but that, yeah, that's one thing she got from me is we're both very, very competitive. And I was a little more loud about it, but she was more of quiet. But yeah, she's a great athlete. And I'll have to tell the story, the Jen story, on the panic for the mom, because she was in gymnastics and then she played volleyball. And then she shows up in ninth grade and she says, "Mom, I think I want to try out for the ninth grade basketball team." I just looked at her and I said, "What do you mean you want to try out?" And I'm like, you don't know anything about basketball and stuff. And so I hurried and scrambled and put a team together and coached it and gave her a little bit of experience before she went and played, you know, just like in a little rec type league, you know, before. So, and then she got a little, you know, experience there. And then she just took off. And she was just one of those kids that was just had natural abilities, and she just thrived with that.
Started in ninth grade, and then all of a sudden, you know what, 6 years later, she's making UConn feel uncomfortable in the Sweet 16.
Yep.
And a professional basketball player.
Volleyball going to the national title game? Like what?
That's incredible. So to your point, Jerem, like, it's one thing to be a two-time All-American in two sports, but how she elevated the teams. A
Sweet
16 berth for BYU women's basketball, and then the national championship.
Like, the teams won too. She wasn't a good player on a bad team. She was a great player on great teams.
Yeah. Amazing.
And Sarah was awesome too. And Heather has a nice role with this group as well.
Yeah. So, yeah, my kids are awesome.
We should add Coach Teresa Spalding-Hampson to your list of accolades as well, knowing what we know now.
Absolutely. Come on.
All right. She's going to have her jersey retired tomorrow, Teresa Spalding-Hampson on BYU Sports Nation. Let's talk about Heather, who is on this year's team, and BYU's taken their lumps. They've definitely taken it on the chin in a number of ways. Did get a big win against Oklahoma State at home last week, which is really fun to watch. What are you doing to coach her mentally while the actual staff does their thing?
Heather kind of does her own thing, but she is coachable, and I think her position at times is difficult. But she is very good to, well, I don't know if you've been told, but she's called the mother of the team and stuff.
Nice.
And so she takes care of all of her teammates, and she's a great support, and she loves the game. I would like to see her on the court a little bit more than she's on the court as a mother and as an athlete. But she's happy with her role. She works hard, and she does everything that she needs to do, and when the time comes and they need her, she comes through for them.
Yeah, she's effective.
And she's effective.
Yep.
And so what else can you do? And I think that accolades to her, because I don't know if I could do what she's doing, but she's doing it well.
So. All right, we got to go to break, but I do want to ask you just about the evolution of women's sports in general and what you're seeing in the last two decades, even the last 5 years.
Yes, tons. Yeah, so when I came in, the NCAA had just started in 82. And I was we went for the first time in 84 and then in 85. And then my first 2 years, I had the big ball. And then the next 2 years, I had the small ball. So I had to adjust to that. And then I think it was 2 years later, they did the 3-point. So a lot of big changes when I was playing. And then, you know, when I went and played professionally, there wasn't really, you know, there wasn't the WNBA. There were some pro teams that were trying to get on their feet, but they kept dying. And to see really what's happening in the WNBA in the last couple of years is even incredible, you know, type of thing. Still would like to see a few more changes. I don't think that they're getting paid enough. They still have to get some kind of deals to really make their money. Caitlin Clark has really changed a lot of things for women's athletics. But we just went to the Arizona game to watch BYU play, and they have tons of people coming to the games. So that's changing. You know, we had the big game against Texas, and I think we had a record of 7,000, yeah, you know, type of a thing. And we were getting like 1,000 or 2,000 players to the game. We preferred to play in the Smith Field House because it was smaller so that we could feel like there was a big crowd, because in the Marriott Center, 2,000 just drowned. Mm-hmm. You know, they're just not, doesn't seem like anyone's there, you know, type of thing. So there's been a lot of changes for the good and a lot of things going on to make things different, you know, just thinking about the gear. You know, I have one pair of shoes. They took my uniform and they made alterations to make them a little longer, you know, because I was so tall and all of the things. They had to make it in the torso and in the shorts. And good thing for Floyd Johnson.
Floyd Johnson, the goat. Floyd's the goat.
You know, just to make all of those kinds of little changes. And then, you know, I don't know how many pairs of shoes Heather has, but at least like six or something they have. And it's just a lot of good changes. I still think that there's room for more changes, but I think that they're moving in the right direction.
And you walked uphill both ways in the snow to the Marriott Center every time you played a game, right?
That's right.
Maybe literally. It depends on the path.
Teresa, congratulations again. Thank you. Can't wait for tomorrow. We're looking forward to chronicling all of that. And again, we're grateful to have you in studio.
Thank you.
You can watch the halftime ceremony coming up tomorrow during the BYU-Arizona State women's basketball game tomorrow, 6 Eastern on ESPN+. Can't wait for that. You can listen on BYU Radio as well.
It's a really busy weekend overall, and we're going to tell you all about it after the break. This is BYU Sports Nation.
BYU Sports Nation is presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
So welcome back to BYU Sports Nation.
Yeah. There's this thing called social media. You can follow the show. We have accounts. It's cool. Like on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok.
It's really simple. Also, you can't be cut off on social media because it's just your own voice, right? So you don't have an annoying co-host.
There are utes in my timeline. They try and cut me. Mute!
Welcome back to the show. I am Spencer. He is Jerem. It's time to roll out a ton of headlines.
Men's basketball plays at number 19 Arizona tomorrow night. Pregame 9 Eastern, game on ESPN at 10 Eastern. Arizona won the first matchup 85-74 in Provo. Wildcats second in the Big 12. Brigham Young University's intercollegiate men's basketball team is fifth. Ken Pom gives BYU a 26% chance to win.
BYU women's basketball will host Arizona State tomorrow. They're going to retire Teresa Spalding Hampson's jersey at halftime.
That'll be cool.
Cougars coming off a loss to Arizona. 3 games left in the regular season. BYU 4-11 in Big 12 play. Game tips tomorrow, 6 Eastern on ESPN+ and BYU Radio.
Number 6, men's volleyball hosts Barry University. Who? A D2 team out of Miami. 2-game series starting tonight. 9 Eastern on Big Ten Plus, on demand on BYUtv.org and the BYU TV app at midnight Eastern. Cougs 10-4 after the sweep at Concordia last weekend. First matchup ever between Barry and BYU, because Barry just added men's volleyball this year.
BYU Gymnastics hits the road for a Big 12 dual meet against Iowa State in Ames. The Cougars, fresh off their first Big 12 victory of the season in that dual format, taking down West Virginia, including 2 9-9s from Brinley Anderson, one on the floor, one on the beam. The meet tonight begins at 7:30 Eastern on ESPN+. Plus, the Cougars in much better position given their increased performance to make regionals.
Hits and sticks, baby. Baseball dominated last night, beating CSUN on the road 19-3. The Cougars hit 10 home runs, most in the game since 98, and the sixth such game in program history. Amazing. Game two of the series tonight, 7:30 Eastern on ESPN+. Plus. Listen to Dave McCann on BYU Radio as well.
Who doesn't want to hear Bombazo 10 times? Play-by-play.
Bombazo!
BYU softball splits their first two games at the Mary Nutter Collegiate Classic in Cathedral City, California, just outside Palm Springs.
Yeah, you used to live there. Yeah.
Cool park. Every one of the fields is designed after a famous Major League ball field. Wrigley Field, Fenway Park, Yankee Stadium. Yeah, really cool.
T-Mobile in Seattle, one of the more famous ones.
Cougars beat Washington, speaking of Seattle, 3-1 before losing to CSUN.
Take that, UW.
6-2.
How do you beat Washington then lose to CSUN?
I don't know.
Come on, let's go.
Strange sports sometimes. Weird bounces. Play continues today with another doubleheader against Hawaii and UC Santa Barbara.
Yeah, beat the Big West foes, you know. I guess Mountain West with the win. Mm-hmm. Men's track and field heads to Notre Dame. A battle of religious institutions to to compete in the distance medley relay, or DMR as the kids call it, at the 2025 Alex Wilson Invitational Saturday.
BYU men's tennis heads to California for a couple of matches. They take on Cal Poly today, followed by Idaho tomorrow. The women seek to keep their undefeated home streak alive as they host Utah State and Fresno State. Speaking of, you need to meet Mountain West teams.
Tennis, Palm Springs, Indian Wells, am I right?
Yep.
Women's volleyball sophomore setter Alex Bauer, junior middle blocker Mia Lee, freshman Suli Davis. She's legit, by the way. Can't wait to watch her play. Heather Olmstead's going to love that I called her legit. Will represent BYU in the U.S. Volleyball Women's National Team Open program in Colorado Springs this week. I'm just excited to watch Suli play. I'm just telling you.
Let's go. Former Batcat Daniel Schneeman of the Cleveland Guardians and another former Batcat, Justin Sterner.
Who lives
of the
in
Athletics.
My ward now, dog?
How
he
about
moved into
that? Okay, let's throw in it. Let's make it a trio, Jeremy. Andrew Pintar of the Miami Marlins, who's made his way up through the minor league ranks. They all start at spring training with their respective squads.
Good luck,
this
boys.
Weekend.
Baseball's back.
Yeah, baby. After the break, track and field sprinter superstar Sammy Oblad is in studio to discuss her most recent record-breaking performance and a look ahead to the Big 12 Indoor Track and Field Championships. This is BYU Sports Nation. Welcome back to BYU Sports Nation. We are live in Studio B, and we are still in the Cougar Council Room for guest number two. She is a record breaker of BYU women's track and field. Sammy Oblad is back on the program. Welcome, Sammy.
Another record, another appearance on the program. Good to see you.
Happy to be here.
Yeah. How you feeling after your latest, greatest performance and another record breaker in the 400 meters, 51.71 seconds? How do you feel about that performance overall? Obviously, it's a record breaker.
Yeah. I've watched the race a few times back and every time making sure that the clock was right. Because it's like, there's no way I ran that fast. Like, their clock couldn't have been right. But pretty stoked. It felt pretty surreal. It was an exciting moment for sure.
Because in track, it's all numerical.
Yeah.
Boom, boom, boom. Do you know right away I just set the school record? Or how you, like, does it take a second to set in?
I think going into that meet, we were in Albuquerque. It's an awesome track. I would claim the best track in the country, my favorite track to run on.
Nice. Really?
The sprinters love it. It's great setup. But getting there, I had been able to compare how I was feeling the year prior going to that meet. So I was able to think, like, okay, I'm feeling a lot stronger, a lot faster. So I was kind of expecting to break the school record. So it wasn't really like, oh my gosh, did I break it? It was more of a, okay, like, did I barely tap into it or did I kill it? And it was a surprise that it was that much of a change from the year prior.
Does that always happen before a meet where you're like, okay, I feel a certain way, therefore I'm going to do this?
I don't think so.
So this was rare, like a certain amount of confidence of like, I'm not just going to run well. I'm going to break the record. Like, I'm going to do it.
Yeah, I think and the record had been, like, Megan had broken the record a week prior, I think.
And you were like, well, now I can break it. Sorry.
But and before that, it was I had run it. And those records were competitive, but it was something that definitely needed to be broken into again to be a more competitive record. And I was feeling like there wasn't really an excuse to not run well at that meet.
That's awesome. That's great. Yeah.
I want to get into the dynamics of why you feel like the track is so good in Albuquerque. Okay.
What makes the track good?
Is it the venue? Is it the fan support? Is it the actual, like, material makeup of the track?
Yeah.
What about it?
I would say it's the track itself. The venue's awesome. The people there are great. Competition's great. But the track itself, you wouldn't really think, I didn't think about this until college. The shapes of tracks are different. So, like, we ran in New York a couple weeks ago. The straightaways on the track are really long, and it's a narrow track. So it's this long, skinny shape. Those are a little harder to run on for sprinters. The track in Albuquerque, it's as wide as it can get. So the straights are pretty short. So you're up and down on those hills more often than not. And there's more momentum going into that.
Interesting. So, President C. Shane Reese would probably appreciate your comment on the track because he is an Albuquerque native.
Oh,
so
yes.
Shout out. President
I'll
Reese.
I knew that, and that's
right?
why.
Right? Okay, Big 12 Indoor Championships are coming up. What's the expectation for you and the team?
I think the team does a good job of stepping up when they need to. So I think this is going to be a good show of people stepping to the plate and saying, I'm performing my best here. So that's kind of an expectation that's held among the whole team is we're going to step up here. For myself, I think it's just proving to myself that I can do that again, that I can run close that time rather than, I went 53 and then I went 51. It'll be showing up again and being able to to prove that it wasn't just an error on the clock, right?
And the women's team is ranked number 2 in the country? Is that what we read correctly?
I think it depends on where you look online. Somewhere that's between 1 and 3, yeah.
That's pretty good.
That's still good.
That's awesome.
Somewhere between 1 and 3. What's the atmosphere and culture around women's track and field at the moment? Just from top to bottom with the staff and all of the athletes that are involved right now.
I think there's a pretty good energy. There's a lot of athletes performing really well. So there's just that kind of competitive, excited energy. A lot of the group is excited to be a part of something that's doing so well and showing up when they need to. I think it's a good culture to be a part of, and it's cool to see people stepping up from different groups. We're typically showing a lot of success in the distance area, and it's fun when there's, we've got throwers doing well, we've got sprinters showing up.
Yeah, to your credit.
So it's cool to see that happen.
I was just going to say that because the distance runners get a lot of love here.
Yeah.
Congratulations as a sprinter, okay? We just want to make sure you feel the love because sprinters matter too. Okay, Stansberry Park greatest athletes. You, Zane Anderson, who are we missing?
It's too bad my brother didn't run in college. I'd say him, but he didn't.
But Stansberry Park represent, right?
Yeah.
You and Zane of the Packers.
Yeah, pretty fun.
When did you realize I'm fast? What was your first recollection of I can run really well and I'm fast?
There was a funny moment in high school. I was a volleyball player. I loved volleyball. At the end of volleyball season, I had a teammate tell me, you're a good jumper. You jump really well. Come high jump. So I show up to track practice. I high jump. It goes great. And the coach says, I want you to race some of my girls. So I run the 100. And then eventually they had me run the 400. And then it became that I was the only 400 runner. I was not fast. This is my freshman year. I'm not doing well, but we didn't have a lot of 400 runners. And
no one wants to run that race.
I didn't want to run it.
It's awful.
And I remember my coach saying something along the lines of like, the 400 chooses you. Like, you don't have a choice in that, right? And I remember running it. I didn't run very well. And he goes, you made finals, so you have to run it again. And it was just this feeling of like, this is it. Like, I have to keep doing this. And I was kind of miserable at the time, but I've learned to love it. I wouldn't pick another event over the 400.
And you only spoke Spanish until you were 5 years old?
Around there, yeah, 4 or 5.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Pretty cool. My mom's
I don't even know
Argentina.
What the question is there. I'm just impressed.
Yeah. Pretty fun. Lots of Spanish words still.
And you still have Spanish in the brain? You're good? Yeah. You're fluent? Yeah.
Yeah, more or less.
Yeah. Más o menos?
Yeah. Okay. Well, listen, with that Spanish and the way that you travel around the country with your sprinting, you are a geography, travel, and tourism major.
That's a cool.
All of these things relate.
I might have done that instead of communications. That sounds fun.
It's a cool one. I love it. It's a fun thing to study. You learn a lot about cultures and people, and you get to connect a lot of things. I didn't realize geography is kind of in everything, but.
Yeah.
All right, my producer's telling me to shut up in Spanish in my ear.
Cállate.
Ándale. Congratulations on your latest record and all of your success, Sammy. Great to have you on the show again.
Thank you. Happy
good
to
see you, Sammy. Okay, number 6 men's volleyball hosts Barry tonight. Who's Barry? D2 team out of Miami. I like the logo, right? Kind of fun. 9 Eastern time on Big Ten Plus. Can't wait for that.
It looks like Iago with a Pirates hat.
I'm molting!
We'll finish up today's show with our elite voice today and a rise and shout out to the boys of summer and the Ataris. This is BYU Sports Nation.
And the Ataris?
BYU Sports Nation is presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
BYU Sports Nation is on demand. You can download the free BYU TV and BYU Radio apps or listen to the pod, subscribe, rate, and review.
Our question of the day, what do you feel like BYU basketball could carry over from their incredible performance against Kansas into the Arizona game?
The rally tails.
At Twiggy or Stone on X says physicality. They took it to Kansas, didn't stop until the final whistle. If they can bring that same energy, this will be a close game. They'll have a good chance of winning. Our elite voice of the day presented by PAX Healthcare, elevated from Lamon J 2930 on X.
There's a mouthful.
Yep. The 3 C's of confidence, chemistry, and control. It's starting to feel like it's all coming together at just the right time. Hashtag Goku.
You're always playing great right now. I like that.
Today's Rise and Shout-Out presented by Mountain America, the official credit union of BYU Athletics.
Only 6 times has BYU baseball hit 10 home runs in a game. One of them was last night. BYU defeated CSUN 19-3. 8 different batters hit those homers. Do it again!
Let's go. Our thanks to today's guests, Teresa Spalding Hampson and Sammy Obud, a couple of outstanding women athletes.
Yeah, love it, love it. Great stuff. Sorry to Dennis Pitta, we ran out of time. Dennis never hit a home run at BYU, fun fact.
He didn't do that.
No, he did not.
That's accurate. For Jeremiah Sutter, shout out to Brock Watkins. We'll see you tomorrow for BYU Women's Basketball on ESPN+. And volleyball against Barry. Woo, go Cougs!